Good afternoon, and welcome to Reminiscing, a program of nostalgia and recollections of the good old days, times that we remember as happy and maybe a little simpler. We know we can't go back, but we can certainly reminisce. This is your volunteer reader, Mary Ellen Stepanek, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, your 24-hour reading station. I guess it isn't really springtime yet, officially, but today I'm going to read springtime stories from the springtime issue of the Good Old Days magazine. Here is the welcome item from the editors of the magazine. It's entitled, What Does Springtime Mean to You? Throughout the years, spring has probably meant different things to you at different times of your life. When you were young, springtime fun might have revolved around hunting colorful Easter eggs or flying a paper kite. As a teenager, spring might have meant meeting up with classmates at school dances or helping your mom and dad plant seeds in the garden. As adults, springtime often meant making repairs around the house or cleaning up the yard after winter. We have captured a bunch of these spring memories in this issue. Step back to Easter's past and remember seeing baby chicks arriving at your local store and hunting for those last remaining Easter eggs. Relive warm weather days with stories of handmade kites lofting high in the air, or made-up games played with friends in the neighborhood. Smile at the memory of flipping through the seed catalog and choosing which vegetables you wanted to grow that year, or groan at the memory of helping your dad get all the crops in the ground. All those springtime memories are what has made our lives go around, and we're happy to share them with all of you. Happy spring from the Good Old Days staff. This first item is entitled Helping Fight Polio in 1952. The neighborhood banded together and did what they could to help find a cure. This story was sent in by Alice Choate. I cherish a photo taken 72 years ago when I, along with my two older sisters, Glenna and Karen, lived with our parents, Glenn and Ann Anderson, in a great neighborhood for 15 years. I'm the youngest daughter in our family, born in 1943. I was able to enjoy my first 10 years of life living among my neighborhood friends, shown in that photo. A few of us became lifelong friends. We all lived within two blocks of each other. Back then, none of us had a television, and each home had only one phone. However, every home had a huge radio in the living room, where the family gathered around in the evening to listen to their favorite shows and the world news. There were a few large yards where we kids would meet up and play all sorts of fun, active games. We can always rely on someone to have a bat, a ball, jump rope, or a pocket full of marbles or jacks to play with. Many of us also had a large swing set with a slide and acrobat bar in our yard. Reading comic books was a huge pastime for all of us. We would get together a couple of times a month and exchange comics with each other. We kids didn't seem to have a care in the world until polio came into our lives. It was a very scary time for the neighborhood families. Our parents were very concerned for all of our welfare. The newspaper was delivered to our front porch every morning, and polio was in the news almost every day. There were photos of the large iron lung machines that someone with polio had to lie in to be able to breathe. Thousands of people of all ages were either paralyzed or died from polio. We didn't want this to happen to any of us. We wanted to help in the fight against polio, hoping doctors would find a vaccine. We asked our parents, "What can we do?" A neighborhood meeting was scheduled with all the parents and children. It was decided we would band together and have a polio benefit carnival, with the proceeds going to the Polio Research Center. All the fathers supervised the event. They helped cook and sell hot dogs, potato chips, and popcorn. The mothers got busy making various kinds of pastries to sell. Their yummy pastries sold out by the end of the evening. The older kids organized game booths. For a 5 or 10 cent fee, you could play a game to win a small prize or get your face painted. We also had a fortune teller who got all his wisdom from shaking up a black ball, turning it upside down, and reading different messages from inside the ball. Pure magic for sure. The younger kids, like me, were all assigned to help an older kid who was in charge of a booth. Also, if any parent needed a runner or something, they would call upon one of the younger ones to do the errand. Our polio benefit was a huge success. We kids were so proud of ourselves. The newspaper sent a photographer out the next day. We were all there cleaning up the yard and taking down the booths. We made $120, equivalent to about $1,400 today, toward the fight against polio. I assure you that when I was in elementary school, standing in line, waiting for the pink sugar cube that contained the vaccine for polio, I felt very proud that I and my neighborhood gang had helped doctors find a cure for polio. And this was Helping Fight Polio in 1952. Something else that used to happen every spring back in our hometown was spring cleaning. And here's an item about that. It's entitled Spring Cleaning in the Good Old Days. The whole family was involved in making sure the entire house was clean. This story was written and sent in by Norma Mizo. Just as in the spring a young man's fancy lightly turns to thoughts of love, Alfred Lord Tennyson, so, in the good old days, a homemaker's mind turned to thoughts of spring cleaning. As a teen growing up in Bicknell, Indiana, during the early 1950s, I knew my mother's thoughts would soon lead in that direction, and I knew I would be included in the process of spring cleaning our home. My mother wasn't any different from other women of her generation. When roses and peonies began blooming, Mom started to get spring cleaning fever. It was an unwritten rule that the house had to be turned upside down to get rid of the dirt and dust that had collected during the winter. Most homeowners at that time warmed their houses with coal, which caused coal dust to settle over everything inside the house, from ceiling to floor. First, our old 9-by-12-foot rug was thrown over the clothesline and beaten with a wire carpet beater that probably had been handed down to us from my maternal grandmother. That was one of my jobs as a teen, to beat the dust from that carpet. After that was accomplished, Dad helped Mom carry the rug to the front yard, where she used a mixture of ammonia and soap to scrub every inch of it. I always hated the smell of ammonia and wondered how Mom could stand to be so close to it. But I must admit, after the rug dried, it was noticeably brighter than it had been when Mom started on it. Another chore of mine was to use a modeling compound product on the ceilings and walls to remove any coal dust. It was almost miraculous the way that glob of clay removed dust and grime. It was a lot of work, especially when I had to clean the ceiling by standing on a ladder. When the piece of clay became too dirty, I grabbed a clean hunk and started swiping the wall again. When using coal to heat homes went out of favor, the manufacturers of that modeling compound changed the name of their product to Play-Doh and sold it as a toy for children. Spring cleaning always meant all the curtains needed to be washed. The cotton lace curtains on the living room windows needed special treatment. After Mom washed them and starched each panel heavily, curtain stretchers were placed in the front yard. We very carefully attached each curtain to the stretcher, which had small tacks or large pins all around the edges of the frame to hold the shape of the curtains while they dried. The goal was to attach the curtains to the pins without getting stuck and having a finger bleed on the clean curtains. Another task Mom thought was necessary for spring cleaning was to carry the mattresses outside so they could air. We first arranged chairs and boxes in the backyard to place the mattresses on. Complicating matters, we didn't have a real stair step outside the kitchen door. Instead, Dad had placed a plank across two cement blocks to serve as a step. It was sometimes a challenge to safely carry a heavy mattress outside when stepping on that unstable plank. One time when I was a young teen, Mom and I started laughing as we were carrying a mattress. We had to take a time out to stop laughing in order to get the heavy mattress outside. It wasn't all drudgery. We found ways to make it more palatable. Some people placed their coal stoves outside in the spring and put a flue stopper on the wall where the pipe was inserted. The pipe was taken outside, and the built-up soot was knocked from inside the pipe. That was a dirty job that I tried to avoid. I don't remember my parents ever moving their stove, but my paternal grandparents did. Their stove was placed on the front porch during the warm months. Then Grandma Smith moved the furniture in the living room for a change of scene until the coal stove was brought back in for the fall and winter months. Coal stoves came in a variety of sizes and shapes. The more expensive ones had a lot of silver chrome. The stoves produced a lot of heat, but it was almost a full-time job to carry coal inside and take the ashes outside. Some people might like to romanticize the good old days, but I would never want to go back to pot-bellied stoves for heat or washing machines and tubs for doing the laundry. Nevertheless, I did get some fond memories from those spring cleaning chores. And this was spring cleaning in the good old days. This next story is about something else that was done every spring. The title is Plantin' Season. Digging the rich dirt, picking out vegetable seeds, and watching the plants grow was treasured family time. This story was sent in by Sarah Etkin Baker. March was and still is my favorite month of the year. Even now, I enjoy breathing in the crisp, clean air and watching the trees begin to blossom. The days grow longer and warmer. The birds chirp once again, heralding spring's arrival. More important, though, March is plantin' season, as my dad liked to call it. March was the month when he began to transform our backyard into a bountiful garden full of fresh fruits and vegetables. When planting season began in 1961, Dad roused me from a deep sleep. "Today's the day," he said, his face beaming. "Put on your gardening clothes, grab your gear, and meet me in the backyard. It's planting season. Hurry now, time's a-wasting." I quickly dressed in a pair of old denim jeans, a long-sleeved flannel shirt, and my gardening boots. I grabbed some peanut butter toast for breakfast on my way to the garage. There, I rummaged through the shelves until I found my gardening apron, gloves, and straw hat. Excitement fluttered deep in the pit of my stomach as I raced toward the backyard, pausing momentarily to smell the damp earth and relish the feeling of the warm sun on my skin. I passed our old pecan tree with fresh new leaves on its branches stretching out like welcoming arms, and then found Dad walking off a 15-by-15-foot space. "This is the most level place in the backyard. It's a perfect spot with plenty of sunshine," he said enthusiastically. We worked together pulling weeds and removing grass before he tilled the soil. I stood on the sidelines and watched Dad, his calloused hands gripping the handles of the tiller as he plowed through the rich soil. With awe, I observed the dirt being turned over, revealing its dark, fertile secrets. He shoveled compost over the area, which I raked, making sure the compost was evenly distributed over the garden area. After a quick lunch, we drove to the local feed and seed store with the truck's windows rolled down, the smell of fresh spring air flowing across our faces and sweaty brows. As we made our way into town, I gazed out the window, staring at the planted fields and envisioning our own garden blooming with life. We arrived at the store, which was abuzz with customers and filled with the familiar scents of soil and seeds. "Here's a list of the vegetable seed packets for you to pick out," Dad said, handing me a somewhat crumpled piece of paper with dirt smudges on it. The list included my favorites: cucumbers, radishes, watermelon, lettuce, squash, bell peppers, tomatoes, chives, and potatoes. I carefully placed each seed packet in our basket and found Dad standing in line at the register waiting to check out. We loaded up the truck with our purchases: a new shovel for Dad, a new hand trowel for me, new gardening gloves, and other miscellaneous gardening items. We made our way home filled with a sense of expectancy and excitement. Back home, I noticed something different as I passed by the old pecan tree. A small wooden sign hung from one of the branches. It read, "Etkin Family Garden." "Look what your mom did while we were gone," Dad chuckled and ruffled my hair. For the remainder of the day, Dad and I worked side by side, digging deep holes and carefully placing a seed inside each one, covering them with a thin blanket of dirt and mulch. The work was hard, but I enjoyed every moment of it. Days and weeks went by, and our garden slowly came to life. The once barren land was filled with vibrant colors and delicious smells. I frequently joined Dad when he tended the garden, watering it and nurturing it with love, care, and patience. When harvest season finally arrived, we were rewarded with the most delicious and bountiful crop. Even now, when I think back to planting season, I feel a sense of pride. Ours wasn't just a garden. It was a symbol of our family's love and hard work. As the seasons changed and the vegetables grew, so did our bond. The old pecan tree still stands, as does the now faded sign that hangs beneath its open arms. Every time I see that sign, I'm reminded of the day in mid-March when Dad taught me more than plantin'. Through gardening, I developed an appreciation for the seasons and rhythms of nature and life itself. I learned observation skills, patience, living with faith, developing a sense of expectancy, and enjoying the fruits of one's labor. Most of all, I cherished the time I spent with Dad, our very own special father-daughter time, in which my love and admiration for him grew and remains in my heart to this day. And this was Plantin' Season by Sarah Etkin Baker. Here's an item left over from last month's Good Old Days magazine. It's entitled A Valentine for Mama. And this was sent in by Ruth Enderly Brown. It was 1941. I was 6 years old and in first grade. Valentine's Day was approaching, and our art project at school was to handcraft valentines for friends and family. I set out to make a special valentine for Mama. First, I traced and cut a big heart out of red construction paper. Then, with crayon, I decorated it with squiggles around the edges, hoping to make it look lacy. I had just the perfect rhyme to use, too, taking great care to print the words in my very best script. I put this message on it. I love you little, I love you big. I love you like a little fat pig. Living and growing up on a farm as I did, I loved all the animals, especially huggable new little piglets. I could not think of anything more dear. On Valentine's Day, I proudly gave the valentine to Mama. She read it, but did not smile. Then she said to me, "One does not call mother a pig." I was puzzled. Such a thought had not entered my mind. Somehow my wonderful valentine had been a flop. I still think it was an excellent verse. I suppose I am in my dotage now, but I am tempted to try using it again sometime. Perhaps I shall. This was A Valentine for Mama by Ruth Enderly Brown. And here's another story from the Bits and Pieces section. It's entitled Voila. This was sent in by John Scanlon. Looking back upon it today, I can only shake my head and laugh at the objects that my mother once helped me sew together. To start with, my mom was a master seamstress. Tucked away in the corner of the master bedroom, she had an old Singer sewing machine. To this day, I can still see her hunched over that thing, feeding material under a needle that was pumping up and down, up and down, up and down. In our utility room's cabinet above the washer and dryer, she kept the other tools of her trade. First, she had a sewing kit that was the size of a tackle box and contained pins, needles, scissors, patterns, and so on. Next to that was an old round candy tin that must have contained hundreds of buttons. When I was a 10-year-old boy, I was nuts about hockey. All winter long, my brothers and I played hockey on our pond. When spring rolled around, we moved into the backyard, replacing the puck with the rubber ball. I always played goalie, and I longed for some leg pads that would save my knees and shins. Well, Mom and I put our heads together to come up with a solution. So, picture this. We took an old pair of Dad's long white flannel underwear and sewed the ankles shut. Then we cut off the legs just above the knees, stuffed them with rags for padding, and sewed them shut at the top. After that, we sewed on four elastic waistbands cut from old underwear, one at each knee and one at each ankle. Voila! There were my goalie leg pads. I may have looked strange wearing them, but they sure did save my shins. This was Voila by John Scanlon. And here are a couple of letters from readers of the Good Old Days magazine in answer to a question posed by the editor. Were you ever in a band, or did you play an instrument when you were growing up? What was your favorite kind of music? Here's one letter. I took piano lessons for a while, but my instructor was so mean that I convinced my mom to let me quit. The good news was that I did learn how to read music. When I was in high school, I played in the percussion section, and because I could read music, I got to play the xylophone, the bells, the chimes, you know, all the fun stuff. And this was sent in by Donna K. Britch of Fort Mill, South Carolina. And one more letter. I took trumpet lessons while in grammar school. The music director at the high school asked me to march in the band and play in the high school orchestra. So I did both. My favorite music was by the composer known as the March King, John Philip Sousa. I've also played taps for veterans at local cemeteries. It was a great experience for me to play music with others. This was sent in by Arthur J. Coate of Amesbury, Massachusetts. And that completes our show for today. You've been listening to Reminiscing on Sun Sounds of Arizona, Arizona's 24-hour reading station. This is your volunteer reader, Dr. Mary Ellen Stepanek, wishing you good afternoon and good memories.